United States v. Owens. Mr. McCullough.
Good morning. May it please the Court. There are two issues before this Court on this appeal, one of which is the increased sentence after the second trial and conviction, which the government has conceded error. The second issue was one that was raised by the defendant in his pro se brief, whether or not the trial court erred in not giving the alibi instruction. The government's position is really an abstract, general principle that it contends controls. You don't have to prove that the criminal defendant is at a particular place at a particular time to prove the crime of aiding and abetting. In this case, that's not what happened. All the events that the government presented evidence on occurred on the morning of October 19, 2002. The defendant presented a witness that said that and testified that Owens, the defendant, was washing his car out in Romeoville. The bank robbery was on the west side of Chicago. They had first gone to Melrose Park, where Mr. Owens wrote the note, the demand note, to be presented by his cousin to the bank teller. All of the events.
But the trouble is the instruction that you were, I don't know if you were.
No.
No. The instruction is no good. That time and place language in the instruction is very misleading in an aiding and abetting case. It didn't matter when he wrote the note. It didn't have to be the same time or the same place. So if he asks for an erroneous instruction, the judge turns it down. Aren't you out of luck?
Well, Your Honor, the proof was that he wrote the note right before Princeton Davis' cousin went into the bank in Melrose Park.
Yeah, but time and place is very ambiguous. Jurors could understand that to mean in the bank at the time of the robbery.
No, I don't believe it is, because the testimony was that he wrote it on his leg.
Yes, I know, but the words time and place in an instruction could signify that he had to be in the bank when the robbery occurred in order to be guilty of aiding and abetting.
I don't believe that.
Well, what's the purpose of time and place then? If he had written the note 6 months earlier, it'd still be an aider and abetter. So why is time and place in the proposed instruction?
The time and place is there because the allegations in the indictment and as proved in the trial were for specific times.
But it's irrelevant.
Well, that's really the...
Isn't it irrelevant when he wrote the note?
I don't know if it's irrelevant.
Well,
factually,
it is irrelevant because suppose I said to you, I want to rob a bank, but I don't know how to write. So would you write me the note, and then I'll go find a bank in some opportune time, and I'll rob it. Now, wouldn't you be guilty of aiding and abetting, even though you had written the note at a time and in a place remote from where the robbery occurred? Wouldn't that still be aiding and abetting or not?
I think it would probably be. I'd have to think about
right.
it.
Right. So time and place is irrelevant in aiding and abetting.
Well,
and if you put it in the instruction, you mislead the jury, because then they'd say, well, he wasn't in the bank, so he was in a different place and at a different time. That's the problem with the instruction.
Except that in this case, all the facts that the government
proved. So what? The point is time and place are not relevant, and they shouldn't have been requested in that instruction.
Well, maybe we can turn it around. What if the government proved something else, that he wrote the note the day before or before?
Well, that's
that,
fine.
Then certainly this wouldn't be proper, but this is a fact-specific case.
The evidence that you're complaining about that wasn't focused upon is the testimony of the person who said he saw Owens washing his car at the same time as the robbery was taking place. That's your problem. See, that's on whether or not he was in the car when the bank was robbed, as opposed to washing a car. That's what that instruction was focused on, wasn't it?
It was focused on that.
Because the aiding and abetting is a separate issue, and that, yes. and if the instruction conflicts with that, then there may have been a better instruction that said that he couldn't be there to rob the bank. It wouldn't focus on who wrote the note.
If that's hypothetical, but that's really not what happened. He did write the note.
I know.
He wrote the note, so he's guilty. So what does the alibi have to do with anything?
He wrote the note on the day and time of the... in the place of the first...
So what does the alibi have to do with it if he wrote the note?
That he wasn't there and he didn't
write
the note.
What difference does it make? That's my hypothetical. I write you a note, write me a note, and 6 months later I execute on the note, so to speak. That's aiding and abetting.
Well, I'm trying to focus on what happened.
The alibi is irrelevant because the time at which, whether he wrote the note... in the car, or before the car, or after, or what have you, doesn't make any difference.
That wasn't what the government argued.
What difference does it make, as a matter of law, when he wrote the note? Does it make a difference?
In an abstract sense, no.
In a concrete sense.
In a concrete sense, here I disagree. Because...
I don't understand you. If he wrote the note, he's guilty of aiding and abetting. You said he wrote the note. That's the end of the case. He can have a zillion alibis. Doesn't matter.
He wrote the note as proved at the trial. And even the...
He wrote the note. That's the aiding and abetting. End of case.
Committee instructions talk about... It's often the case in aiding and abetting, but it doesn't say every time. The committee comments to the alibi instruction.
The alibi, again, was focused on whether or not he robbed the bank physically there. That's the whole point of the alibi, isn't it?
No.
That doesn't have any reference to aiding.
Yes, that he wasn't there at the time.
Yeah, he didn't.
That was the argument. That
when Princeton was robbing the bank, he was supposedly driving the car.
He was driving his brother's BMW.
Yeah.
As a getaway car.
Yeah, and the evidence of the... or at least the testimony of the man watching him wash his car supposedly on that date, and there's obviously a lot of conflicting things in there, that's the whole point of the alibi. It didn't address the aiding and abetting, and that's why that it's probably not going to work in this particular trial.
Well, it may not. I don't have anything other to say right now.
One other thing, and I don't know whether it matters, about the comment of the witness about he robbed a bank, when asking where he got all the money when he bought all the stuff for what's her name?
Right.
Yeah, and keeps saying, well, he robbed other banks. And that isn't what he said or she said. That was in the first trial. The reason that thing went back the first time was because... somebody said, or I think guess she said that, and the, both the prosecutor and the witness did not say other banks. He said he robbed a bank before. One of the reasons why he had all that money to spend on her that day.
Right.
That's not the same as in the first trial.
It is not.
Okay.
I see my time is up right now.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McAuliffe. Mr. Murray?
May it please the court, my name is Tyler Murray and I represent the United States, the appellee in this case. I'd like to start by briefly talking about this alibi instruction issue. Not only did the district court not err when it declined to give the instruction, it would have been improper for it to give the instruction under the evidence in the case and the arguments presented to the jury by the government. I'd like to briefly touch on this North Carolina v. Pierce issue. The district court sentenced the defendant to a higher sentence after the retrial than it had at the initial trial. Now, there's no indication from the record that it did so based on defendant's conduct post sentencing in the first trial. Therefore, the district court did run afoul of North Carolina.
Did he give any reason for the higher sentence?
He did give a reason, and the reason is summarized in the government's brief.
But you say reason based on conduct known when he made the first, when he gave the first sentence.
So that's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
So therefore, can he do the same? Can he give any sentence he wants, or does he have to do 145? Or what should happen on remand with regard to the sentence?
I believe it should be a full remand, Your Honor, because perhaps the district court judge has some unarticulated reason why he imposed a higher sentence. The fact is the record on that isn't clear right now, so I believe he should have an opportunity to resentence consistent with North Carolina v. Pierce. The problem is the record right now doesn't give a satisfactory answer under that case for the higher sentence. So unless there are any other questions, the government would respectfully request that the conviction of Mr. Owens be affirmed and that the case be remanded to the district court for resentencing consistent with North Carolina v. Pierce.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Murray, and thank you to Mr. McAuliffe for accepting the appointment.